Hi everyone, I'm here with Danny Simpson. He's the co-founder and CEO of the MID Group. Hi Danny, thanks for coming on.
You're very welcome. Good afternoon. I hope you're well, Doug.
Yeah, I like the standing stance. So I've got to
try to mix up the day, buddy. When you've had a morning sat down, you know it's good to stand up. And I've normally been walking around trying to get some steps in, but at least I'm stood.
No, I've got one of those standing desks where you like crank it up and you can kind of move from a seating to a standing position. So I haven't used it for a little while, but yeah, I had good intentions. I do like standing as well. So, you know, I appreciate that. So, okay. So Danny, to start with, can you just give us a kind of a brief background on what you do now, what the MID Group is, and a little bit about your background?
Yeah, of course, no problem. Thank you. I'd be delighted to. So, Danny Simpson, co-founder and chief exec of the MID Group, which incorporates two businesses. And our larger business is a business called MID Communications, which is the franchise part of our business, which is a franchise of what is now Virgin Media O2. The business has been operating 18 years. I've been a part of it for 15. It started in 2007 with my two business partners today. One's an ex-bank manager and one was a sort of an entrepreneur, if you want to call it. He had a number of different retail shops across the UK. They saw a bit of an advert in Dalton's Weekly, as you do, for a franchise opportunity to go to. And they went through the interview process and they were one of the first franchisees in the UK for O2. And the business started in 2007 in May. They opened their first shop in Cleveland. And by the time they had December, they had five stores, which represented 25 of O2's franchise estate at the time. They traded reasonably well, I would say, up until the point of 2009, where they started to hit a bit of a challenge, where because they weren't in the telecommunications market, they really started to understand how they could maximise the commercial model and how they could maximise the sector and the industry that they're in. And obviously, telco and some franchisees were a little bit more niche to run than others. So they were in a position where they either sell the business. It wasn't in a great trading position at this time now. They were paying wages on credit cards. They were in a position of, you know, we either bring somebody in or we sell it. I'm very grateful that the person that they went to sell it to gave them a crap offer. And that's the reason why they decided to bring somebody in. At the current time, I was an area manager at Three Mobile. So I've been in the retail and telco industry since I was 20, so 22 years. So from my perspective, it was great to have the opportunity to join a business where I felt that I had the opportunity to showcase some of my skills and ideas differently and leave telco from a corporate level. And at the time, I was going through a recruitment process with Vodafone, so it was a nice opportunity. But yeah, I joined the business in 2009. We started to change what the business did, looking at how it operated. And at the time, the business was called MID Properties Retail, which just didn't really fit the dynamic of the business.
Danny, just to cut in on the sorry on that on that. Were you a franchisee of O2 effectively? You signed a franchise agreement. Was that
Correct. Yeah. So at the time, MID Properties Retail Limited was a franchise. Then they took five stores with O2. So they had five O2 stores as a franchise partner of O2. And O2 were in that position to help them try and recruit somebody in. Or, you know, their advice was, look, it's not in a great position and it's not how this sector generally runs. So, yeah, I was lucky enough to be posted in the opportunity in 2009. We've scaled the business since then through organic growth and merger and acquisitions. When I started, there were 42 franchisees in 2009, and of last year there was 13 franchisees. So over the years, it's been a channel of consolidation. O2 is at its peak. 47% of O2's estate was franchised, so that they had a total of 208 stores, which of mass was franchised. And they've been on that journey of opening new stores. And the franchise program was born for O2 into tertiary locations, secondary locations where they thought, you know what, we don't think we can make a store work in that environment, but happy if a franchisee wants to come along. That's where the model was born. And it was a great success. Franchises generally over the years outperformed their own company-owned stores on, you know, customer experience scores, net promoter scores, performance, and of course, compliance. So from their perspective, it's been a very good channel. They've sold their own stores, that, you know, rather than I think in 2011, they looked at the bottom, I think it was like the bottom 60, 70 stores that they had in their program. And they made the decision, rather than close them, you know, we'd sell them into franchise and let franchise do what they've been doing best with them. So it was a great opportunity for franchise to grow, which we were a part of, and we were a part of that process, which we were grateful for. And then after that, you know, being a mindful as a franchisee, you know, the franchisor does different things. And at that point, it wanted to start exploring its opportunities to start, you know, merging. I think BT were knocking on the door. That didn't go through because they bought French Telecom and EE was born. Then they tried to merge with Three. So the business stopped. The franchisor really started to stop doing what it was doing best. And it started to look at how we could either merge or take in with investment. And I think for me, that played a slight challenge. But it played a positive in franchisees in the sense that we had an appetite to grow. You want to grow your business. So we started having conversations about buying each other. And that's where the cannibalization and the consolidation started to happen. And, you know, we've done a couple of acquisitions. We did our biggest in 2016, which was a £4.6 million acquisition to almost double the size of our business. And then we did a couple of acquisitions after that of small franchisees. And as a Northern lad here in Manchester, I wanted to focus myself around my own personal values and goals around making sure we built our business around Manchester, because I wanted to make sure and provide that, I guess, that inspiration to the next generation that, you know, you don't have to go always to London to have a career and be successful. You know, you can start a business with anything, and there's lots of different ways of doing that, either through your own idea or in this instance, through a franchise program, working with a larger brand to help kickstart your commercial branding, if you like. So, yeah, it's been a great journey.
And Danny, how long was that journey as a franchisee with O2? Was that about 10 years?
So, no, I've been, we're still on the journey with them now. So, we've still got some stores with them now. So, currently, the business has been trading 18 years. I've been part of that journey personally for 15 years. I started in 2009 and still here now. But the franchise programs helped us give birth to a couple of other businesses that we've still got in the group, which are growing and scaling and doing other things. So I guess it's never kind of putting all your eggs in one basket and always looking at how you can continue to diversify yourself, especially if you want to be a businessman or entrepreneur, however you want to call yourself, really, whatever you want to title as. But a true entrepreneur has multiple different business interests. So for me, it's about how can we capitalize on what you've got to build other things outwards.
All right. Okay. So so talk to me about some of the, because O2 is a big brand, right? Everyone knows O2. Yeah. And so when people see these big brands, big companies out there, the assumption is, oh yeah, they do things right. You know, if they're a franchise, that's great. You're always going to make money. You're going to be well supported, all the rest of it. What are some of the advantages of being part of such a well-known brand? Because the majority of franchising involves not very well-known brands. You know, they're not high street brands. They're not brands that are on the telly and stuff like that. And obviously O2 is a massive brand. So what were some of the advantages of that? And what were some of the disadvantages of actually being a franchisee of such a big, well-known brand?
Yeah, it's a great question, Doug. So, I think some of the advantages, obviously, you've got the brand, the recognition, you know, instantly as you put stores on the high street, people will walk in, they know who you are, they've seen you on the television, you provide a service. So it's a great kickstart to having a name over the door. And I think, you know, the systems, the policies, the procedures, some of the risk, being honest with you, you know, depending on how you're paid and remunerated, you know, or some of the risk is carried with O2, so, or the franchisor. So for those factors, it's really great. And I think, you know, quite supportive. They've got big teams, lots of depth to them, lots of experience and knowledge in there in businesses like that, where you can kind of call upon and draft upon it. However, sometimes moving into some of the challenges is, you know, O2 big businesses, they're faceless, right? So, and not everybody at the beginning of our journey understood franchising. It was still kind of a bit of a dirty spectrum of, oh, well, you're not quite O2. It's a case of, well, we are. I've got the brand over the door. So it's about how people perceive that. So we've worked really hard to do different things, which will come on to later. But another disadvantage is sometimes they will want to have too much conversation or too much input into how you run your people. And again, we worked really hard with the franchisor to allow us some slack on that. And again, I'll talk to you about some of the people results that we've had over the years by doing that. And for me, it's around how sometimes the disadvantage is their culture isn't your culture. When you start to build your business, you create your own culture. And sometimes that doesn't align with the franchisor because you do things for your people and your business, but you're still aligned commercially to what they want to achieve. And the other disadvantage is, look, they change direction sometimes, big companies. They only have short-term, from my opinion, a short-term view. They only really make business plans for the next 12 months, 2 years, if that, if you're lucky. I can't remember the last time I've ever seen a three-year strategy from Telefonica that has been shared with us. I'm sure they've had them, but they've never been shared with them. So there are disadvantages there that you've kind of got to think about, you know, how do we do this within the model, and what can you do and what can't you do? And obviously with a franchise model, the other thing is sometimes it depends on what are the restrictions within your franchise agreement that stop you wanting to be that entrepreneurial spirit, which is, in my opinion, why a franchisor would want to have a franchise channel. It's about creating that innovation, ideas upwards into the business, challenging the business upwards. You know, you're going to be the front face of the business on the cold face of it with your team. So, but sometimes big brands do think that, you know, unfortunately, they know better than what you do. So them are some of the disadvantages, but it's all about working through those challenges.
Relationships. No, thanks for that, Danny. And to take me back to what I want to understand is, you chose a franchise that matched your skill set, experience and background, which was O2. It's like an industry you knew well because you were in it already. And did you ever look at different franchise opportunities that were not in your channel, like totally different ones?
Great question. Yeah, we did. We've looked at many over the years. Obviously, we've looked at McDonald's as an example, but you can only have McDonald's in a lot of the other business interests. We've had a conversation with major coffee brands that you probably may know of, that franchise businesses. And we've had conversations with not so well-known coffee brands, like Esquire's Coffee as an example there. They were coming into the UK and we were talking to them about master franchising. And then, you know, we've kind of had conversations with gyms, from Anytime Fitness to Stat Fitness. For whatever reason, one for another, you know, those things just never materialised. I think at one point we went through a process of saying to ourselves, the franchise program is really, really brilliant. And they are really great models. However, I think with every business, you've got to understand what your risks are and what your challenges are. And the big one for any franchisee should be that, you know, just remember you've got a franchise agreement that's got an end date on it. You know, if it's McDonald's, it's 20 years, ours is 10, but it's only a 5 and a 5. So the franchisee can make the decision. And I think that's one of the biggest downsides to it, they have more control over your business than you will ever have. And remember that you're a part of their brand, they're not a part of your brand. And I think it's really being complementary to each other, but continuing to build that relationship with the two of each other, because I think that's super important. So for us, we decided that looking at the models and the time commitments, we kind of wanted to try ourselves of going, well, what if destiny is in our own hands? Because again, one of the challenges with a franchise model like O2 is if your business hits a challenge, you would want to diversify and go off and go, it's okay, well, we'll go and do this over here. The challenges with O2 is, or a big franchise brand like that is, if they don't want to go that way, you ain't going that way. So you have to become very good at reinventing yourself with the tools that you've got, despite one of the avenues or the sales channels drying up. And not everything the franchisor puts out works, you know. I could tell you a million products that we've tried to push for O2 over the years that just aren't available in the portfolio today because they've not gone well. And some you've got to think about, you know, what's the commercial advantage? And I think some franchisees that I've had the privilege of working with, and I was lucky enough to chair the franchise community. I represented the franchisees as a community, as a voice into the world of O2. And I think some of the challenge that you will have is around how you think about sometimes, or if the franchise owner wants to do something as a business owner and as a franchisee, we always think, well, what's in it for me? How much am I going to get paid? And I think if you really want a franchise relationship, you've got to sometimes do things that you might not make money on, or you might break even, and sometimes you might lose things on. But it's about helping the franchisor really drive their ambition and product, because if it does work, it's a benefit to you later on in the line. But I think sometimes, you know, don't always think when you, especially when you've got a successful model. I think that was certainly some of the challenge with some of the bigger franchisees. As we got bigger, some franchisees lost sight of the relationship and started to think, well, unless it's more money for me, you know, we're not going to do that. And I think, you know, you start to really fracture your relationship there. Remember, it's a complementary. You're working with for the brand to deliver the brand, not the other way around. And that gives you the great strengths and helps your business instantly inject some acceleration. But, you know, at the same time, be aware of what your risks and your challenges are, but look at what your opportunities are within those risks. So I think with every challenge you've got, there's an opportunity to maximize that challenge as well.
Yeah. You know, Danny, you talked about something, you know, on entrepreneurship, right? Entrepreneurial spirit, if you like. Yeah. And in my experience, the majority of franchise opportunities out there are not geared towards the entrepreneur. They're geared towards someone who is probably more used to being employed. They want their own business, but they're never going to create their own brand and design their own model. And therefore, franchising is a brilliant hybrid where they can come in with compliancy and they can follow a model and a system and a process. And they can, you know, they can build a successful business on that basis. For entrepreneurs like yourself, you have to be very careful about what franchise brand you choose to invest, you know, with or in, because it can cause a massive problem. If you're too entrepreneurial and the brand isn't looking for that kind of franchisee, then you're going to be at odds for maybe the whole relationship, and that's not a great place to be. And so, you know, I talked to a lot of high net worth investors who are looking for the next kind of big thing, if you like, and a lot of them are looking at brands that are coming across from the US, from Europe, and they're seeking masters. So you've got some experience there, and those brands are seeking more entrepreneurial types because they need people that will build the structure in the UK around the brand. Yes, they can lean on the structure that was built maybe in the US, but it's totally different over here. And that's where that entrepreneurship side comes much more to the front. And so, yeah. So I wanted to ask you, because you've obviously looked around at opportunities, and you are much more on the entrepreneur side than most people. How do you go about your due diligence? Like, what do you look at? So when you're looking at coffee, or when you're looking at food brands, or when you're looking at obviously O2 at the time, what are you looking for? What are some of your key indicators as you do your research, even on Google, just looking around? What things jump out at you and make you more interested? And what things jump out at you and make you less interested when you're looking at various opportunities?
I think it's a great question, Doug. But I think, again, it comes back to a little bit of individuality because everybody's slightly different. I think if you wanted to be an owner-manager business where you wanted to be hands-on and running the business, you know, making sure you've got a good model with good commercial revenue streams in there with a good amount of time that allows you to do that, and just always do remember that your franchise models are probably going to be geared towards more of the franchisor than they are for you. So please also don't start to look at contract or franchise agreements and think, well, that's not fair and that's not right. It's a case of, well, you know, there's only a small amount of wiggle that you're going to get because it's their business and that's how they want to do it. And then there's the other businesses, which I think I also look at. So when we're looking at coffee as an example, Esquire's was really great, and we got very close to doing an acquisition with them around the master franchise program for the north of England, and as well as acquiring a couple of their shops. But I did look at what is the franchisor open to ideas of how they can work. So give you a couple of examples in O2, what we've done over the years is, if you want to run the business, you could just open a store, close a store and run it, and you'd do a great job. But, you know, we've got a call centre downstairs now that O2 didn't start a call centre with, or have a voice franchise programme. But that started in my kitchen with a little bit of work with the franchisor, thinking about how can we, you know, put multi-channel into franchise and give the opportunity there. And that's the highest is employed, 14 people. And it's still successful today, and we retain 93% of customers over the telephone because if the customer chooses that way. My other business, Mid Digital, was born, which is now its own. And actually, we worked with O2 to create what's called a business franchise model. So we work with them and a couple of other franchisees to create another model because they were open to that idea. And how do we, we're in the communities serving the consumers, but there's businesses here as well. And sometimes we're getting business companies coming into stores and it doesn't really fit the model. So rather than turn business away, we capitalize on that. So our second business, Mid Digital, that's in its second year now, and it's probably, it's heading for a 750-800K turnover by the end of March this year. Probably next year we'll double that again and we'll go to about £1.52 million. And again, acquisition, same model. But we are the only, I'm really proud because it's always about the people that do this. So it's easy for me to come in here and talk about what I've done or what I perceived is what I've done, but you never do it on your own. You need great people to execute. But that's now standalone. We're the only franchise that's evolved from a business franchise model to a full partner model of O2, and then we are now partnered with EE and 3 and Currys Business and the rest of them. So, but that's because we went out there, I was prepared to go out and fail. We took some guys from our schools and said, let's go networking and let's see what we do. And you learn from your failures and you look back and you build something. So really looking at some of the other things that we've given birth to is because at certain times, your franchisor is innovative and is looking for innovation and is looking for new ideas. And it's about just keeping that dialogue with your franchisor, not just thinking about, I'm here to operate a business and make a living. And sometimes, they're good livings. If I was running a sandwich shop, as an example, you might make 100 grand a year at your franchise business running a sandwich shop. And you're definitely not going to earn 100 grand a year opening your own sandwich shop or being a manager of a sandwich shop. So I think there are those instances of where that's what I would personally look for. How workable is the franchisor? Is it just a model that they say, here it is, that's how much you're going to get earned, go and operate it and do a great job. And if you're lucky, if you do a good job, we might give you a few sites, maximum 3, 4, 5 sites. That for me is almost like in the world of sales, somebody saying to me, here's a commission structure, but you're capped. And some people like that and some people don't. So it's about the personality of what you're looking for, what you're trying to do. But I think most franchisees and franchisors, I think if they look at the BFA that we've worked with for a little bit over the years and been interested in, and people like yourself, I think the statistic this day is that 92 or 94% of franchise businesses in the UK are successful. But I think it's making sure that you get, look at your formulas, look at your recruitment. Best thing we did was create our own brand within a brand. You're advertising. Imagine advertising a staff member in a shop. It reads O2 and they turn up and then you have to explain, actually, we're not O2. We're mid-communications. We're a franchise. So and they go, hang on a minute. I thought I was applying for a job. So you've got to think about how you build your brand within that, because they're never going to get paid from O2. They're going to get paid from you as a franchisee. So you've got to think about how you build that people brand and how you build the employer of choice. And look, we were lucky. We went on a journey. I think this is super important for me, for any business, but definitely for franchisee businesses, because it helps credibility, right? Your franchisor will listen more if you build your own personal credibility. And this was a game changer for us. In 2016, we started our Invested in People journey, and we was accredited with silver because we wanted to say to O2, we can do things differently and slightly better than what you can do, because we have a closer relationship with our staff. They're not a payroll number, right? They know me, I'm in the stores as a franchisee, I'm running my business, I build personal relationships. I want to connect with my people with emotional connections based on trust. So we were very lucky in 2016 to get silver. In 2019, building the business out and building a leadership team, we got Investors in People platinum. Now, our franchisor doesn't even do Investors in People. Just to put that into context, platinum is the highest level you can get. Only 2% of businesses in the UK have been accredited with that, only 1% in the North. And in fact, we were the 27th business to be accredited with that. And then other franchisees started to go through that process. Some got silver, some got gold. I think there was only one other that acquired platinum, and that was last year, which is great for them to do that. And we've since retained our platinum title in 2022 when we went through the accreditation again. So we've retained it twice. And that tells me what a great job we're doing with our people and what a community and a sense of purpose that we're building. And it makes your franchisor think about, actually, these guys have got something that maybe we can learn from. And I think it's about, again, adding value to that relationship, but not in a greedy or commercially driven mindset way of going, well, I'll do that, but what's in it for me? Because sometimes in business, we're constantly looking at the bottom line. We're constantly looking about profit. And absolutely, I'm not saying that's not important. But as a leader of any business, franchise or not, I think what's super important is you look at the balance between the health of the business and the health of the people. And our jobs as leaders is to make sure that the balance is pretty much staying kilter with each other. If one goes in the direction of the other, you're in a bit of a challenging situation.
No, absolutely. What's really interesting listening to you is looking at that franchisor-franchisee relationship and the dynamic. And every brand is different, and every culture is different, and everyone's different. We all know that. But it is true that no franchisor, however big they are, it doesn't matter if they owe two, it doesn't matter if how well known as a brand they are, they can always and should always be looking to improve the franchise model that they have. And the only way you can do that is to listen to those franchisees that are operating that model in their own businesses and look at what innovations are being done, like you did, and encourage innovations to be done, and then learn from that and not feel that they can't. Because I think a lot of franchisors, Danny, they position themselves in a place where the franchisees think they've got all the answers. And that's not a good starting point, because then it's hard for a franchisor to go and be collaborative with their franchise network. And then you create this disconnect, and that disconnect's really not helpful. And so, that for me is a real key kind of point to make to existing franchisors that might be listening is, listen to your franchise network, encourage your franchise network, get ideas from your franchise network. And you might be surprised at actually how much they can help you put better processes in place, come up with new ideas. And yeah, you know what? There'll be a lot, maybe 90% of them, the franchisor is not going to do anything with, but there might be 5 or 10% there, which could be transformative. And that's really what you're talking about, isn't it, Danny?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're spot on. And I think the franchisors need to always remember, why did they start franchising in the first place? It's a cost-effective growth model that allows them to be innovative and agile and have a faith in the local communities. I see as some of the strengths as to why you would have a franchise model. I think the other thing for me is if you do have the privilege of anybody listening that works with a large franchise or where they've got their own stores plus theirs, I think for me it's massively and hugely important from what's my situation has been, is that they've got a representation at board level of franchise. And like I said, 18 months ago, O2 have made the decision that they want to wind the franchise program back in over the next 5 years. And that's fine. That's their decision to do that. I can tell you why some of that decision has been made is because O2 have never had, since probably 2012, a great representation at board level of what franchise is and what it does. So I think people come in at board level, change it with great power and responsibility, don't really understand something, don't want to understand something, and sometimes make what I perceive would be a bad decision. They clearly think it's a good one, and that's just a difference of opinion, and that's fine. They're quite within the right to do that. It's a commercial model. It's got a franchise agreement. But as I said, some people would work with a big brand and think, this is great, we're here forever, and it doesn't. And we're not the first business to do that, I know. American Golf have done that, and other franchisors have done that globally, have taken their franchise estate back in because for whatever reason they want to change direction or the franchise model just stops working. And I think that for me was the biggest challenge that we wanted to take with O2 was they'd not brought any new franchisees in for a number of years now, from 2011, 2012, when the model started to break a little bit. And that was around where we wanted to say to them, says, how do we reinvent the model that allows you to keep bringing fresh franchisees into the business to keep this fresh and innovative, right? New ideas, outside thinking. The reason why you have churn in your business, because it's healthy and it's good to have it. And the model, I don't think anybody new has joined this business, a franchise model, in Telefonica Virgin Media O2, which is now today. This is 2011. As that tells you that, you know, there's a challenge there. So I think as a franchisee, you know, have a look at, you know, is the franchisor still wanting to expand and grow, or is it wanting to do something different? Because when it does something, it will affect you. And I think so, keeping that relationship and that closeness of understanding what are they trying to achieve is interesting. And I knew the minute they started talking to EE, you know, I gave birth to a program in franchise, or we give birth to, should I say, but I had the pleasure of naming it, which is called Making Franchise Impossible to Ignore, because we knew if BT were going to come in, we wanted to make sure they recognised what franchisees was doing. We're a face on the ground, we're connecting in the communities. Auto had even tried to replicate some of our models and they couldn't do it because they don't have that face and that commitment. So remember the strengths that you play as a franchisee and the strengths that you play as a franchisor, they will cross over at certain points, but do always remember there are individual strengths that you both have, and it's about collaboration together and exploiting those strengths that I think were the real great franchise programs will do. And McDonald's are probably a great example of that.
Absolutely.
But that's one that's always stuck with me. Their model is, and that's why they want you to just focus on them, right?
Danny, I wanted to ask you a question, right? Because you've had direct experience of it. Franchising in the past, you're right. It was in the papers for the wrong reason. It was a bit of a dirty word. This is back in the 80s, 90s, that kind of time,
yes.
And that carried forward, I think, into maybe early 2000s. For various reasons, you know, there's some cases that hit kind of front page headlines and certain papers and so on. As an O2 franchisee in your local community, as part of a big national brand, what did you say to people who questioned the fact, oh, you're just a franchise, you're not actually the brand, you're not O2, how did you promote the benefits of being a franchisee? So a local lad, if you like, in the local community, but working with a big, well-known brand, because that's something that some brands do have problems with. And so I want to hear your kind of take on the positive side of that.
It's a great question. That's the reason why we wanted to make sure that people understood, and we grew the brand. So I changed the name in 2010, actually, sorry. From Mid Properties Retail Limited to Mid Communications, because I wanted to found a new brand name that I believe that people wanted to work for our brand just as much as they wanted to work for O2. And think about what do they bring and what do they not bring. You know, they're big, I'm small. They're slow, I'm fast. You know, they're faceless, I've got a face. They don't really, big, sometimes bigger brands talk about being customer centric. I can practice things from customer centricity perspective that they can't do. They want to have a sales script around what they want to do. My model has always been really simple, right? Serve everybody like it's your mum, your dad, your brother, your sister, your best friend. You can't really go wrong. Create a framework for people to operate in and let them have a bit of freedom. So as long as I've always said to my managers and leaders, as long as you don't kill anyone, burn the store down or bankrupt me, everything else we can pretty much sort out and correct. So it's about going out there and trying different things. So I think it is a challenge, but I think when you do those things and you create a great environment for your people to come and work in, when you do get them people at the beginning, they're your ambassadors, right? So don't see them just as workers. See them as the biggest investment you're ever going to make in your business model. I've always believed that you're never going to have anything else as a business owner, franchisee or franchisor or entrepreneur, whatever business you're running, the best investment you're always going to have is your people. Because if you invest time into it and coach it, you're never going to get anything that will give you a bigger return. You can't buy anything that's going to give you a bigger return other than people if you get the right people. So they become your advocates in them local areas. And then they'll start talking about, you know, to their friends. And we've always, you know, we've run a great recommend a friend scheme for staff to come and work here. And that's the KPI that I have always looked at. If our people won't recommend our business, then we've got work to do. And for me, you know, we currently now, you know, we pay commission in our model, O2 don't. So it's thinking about what can I offer that O2 don't, where they're still going to get all of the benefits, they still get all the O2 staff discounts, great, but we add on to it. And that's even more important in today's where we are now, because people not just want a great salary, they want a good work-life balance, and actually they want a little bit around, well, what is my employer going to do for me beyond just paying me a wage? in my exchange for time. And I think realistically, if you can think about that within your model, whether it's a sandwich shop, whether it's a cleaning business, whether it's a valeting business, or whether it's something, you know, a larger scale business, always think about, you know, how you scale your business and how you build it. And, you know, I've had the privilege of working with other businesses and mentoring them a little bit on changing their model. And I know that we had a conversation before this, was a gentleman called Richard Few, who's got a business called Sales Geek, and they want to change the way that the world perceives sales. Been a great friend of Richard. I've helped him grow his business, build a culture. And I remember just before we went into lockdown, some of the conversations that I was working with Richard was, he was exploring the opportunity of becoming a franchise. And I gave him some of the conversations around, here's the risks, here's the rewards, but just think about, is it the right reason? And I know he's completely changed his business now, and his business is going in a different avenue. I think he's got like 29, 30, 31 franchisees. He's looking at a massive program over in America. I'm still working with some of his franchisees here in Manchester and Bolton to help them really accelerate the model. So don't be scared of collaboration from different businesses and other industries. Don't just think my job is, you know, I've got a butty shop or I've got a cleaning business. That's what I'm doing every single day. Try and find ways of where you can look at how you would grow that business and involve your franchisor in conversations with that. But never discount the fact that you have a value and you will build a brand and your brand will have a value. Never of the same level or of value or as the brand that you're working with, maybe, but it has a value. And that value will also have value to your franchisor. It's about how you position it. Try and always make sure, you know, you're always thinking about the day you started. I always believe that, try and keep a mindset of, like we did when this was really exciting, it was new, despite all your challenges. You were grateful for the opportunity. You put a lot of hard work into your business to scale it and grow it. Keep those mindsets and always create that eagerness and that hungerness and that humbleness of when you started your business. And honestly, I think every franchise business has the opportunity to do it. And if you look around now, God, it's hard to go into anywhere that's not got a franchise business. You know, telecommunications is all franchise and partner, Vodafone, EE, and Three, Starbucks, Costa, McDonald's, KFC, Dunkin' Donuts, Snap Tools, Anytime Fitness, Snap Fitness, finance models. You know, there is hundreds, right? And it's aligned with electric, I would say. It's electric opportunity. If that's what you're looking for. If you want to be entrepreneurial or you want to think about being an entrepreneur, growing, again, make sure you look at the franchise, because McDonald's isn't right for you. You can only operate their business. So if you do want to have other business interests, great, scale your business, get a great leadership team in, and then you can start looking at what there are else, because there are franchisees in the UK that have got some Starbucks, some Costas, you know, some X, Y, and Zs. So they've got multiple different brands within their organisation, and that's also something for you to look at. It's about how big is your mindset and your attitude and your appetite, and your only limits are the ones that you set yourself.
It's good hearing you talk like that about all that, and it's really interesting. And you know, you mentioned something there which has come up before with me, and sometimes it's seen as a negative, which is the high street over here looks exactly the same as the high street over there, because it's all, you know, franchise brands, and there's no independence, and it's killing the independence and all of this. I look at it a totally different way. And I've been involved in franchising for 20 odd years now. Every single franchisee is someone who is part of that local community. You know, they've started their own business. Yes. It's on a brand that's already proven and so on. So they haven't come up with their own brand and all of that. But they are a local business owner. They own that business in their local community. They are serving the local people. Whatever business it is, there needs to be an appreciation that that actually there's a massive benefit to that and a positive to it. And there are so many hundreds and hundreds of different franchise businesses and models, and they all started as an independent business, you know. So it's just a way of actually growing what was a really good, could have been a quirky, people like to use that word, independent business, but now that quirky independent business is on every high street. Well, what's so terrible about that? You know, I, like, you know, so I do, you know, this is me defending franchising and a little bit and franchise brands, because it's too easy to say, oh yeah, because you're a franchise, you're not as good, or you're not as, I don't know, you're not as committed to the local community as that independent store over there, which is a one-off, and you won't find that on any other street anywhere in the land. Why is that person better? Well, I don't, you know, there's, to me, there's not really an argument there, but
it's how you, it's a really interesting point. It's how you connect with all of that. And that comes back to the point where I said before, you know, they're big, you know, I'm small. And we've done lots of different things over the years that's been wild and wacky within the communities, but, you know, engaging with, find out what's important to your local community and start doing it. Where are your local communities going? What's the local charity that people are supporting? What's the local networking event that's going on? You know, if I was a local, you know, coffee shop as an example, I'd be making sure it's summertime, you know, I'm standing outside some of the bigger brands with maybe a taster or, a, you know, try our muffin, you know, come in, or we'll give you our price, whatever it might be. But you've kind of got to take that entrepreneurial spirit to drive it. Don't just, I think, again, some people presume that we're going to get involved with, you know, somewhere we're going to be the best sandwich makers on the high street, right? No, not necessarily. You could be next to Di's calf next door and they're absolutely milking you. And actually, she's got a small little catering van that she's taking out on the road to business parks every day. So she's doing double your business, but you still believe, well, we're the best butcher shop on the street because we're Subway, right? And it's about when you start to create that arrogance, or when you believe that you're at your most, you know, you're doing really well, you're most successful, it's when you're at your most vulnerable and it's when you're at your most weakest. Because that's where complacency will set in, innovation will stop and shrink, sometimes, not always, because we think, yes, we've made it, you know, I've got this brand, I'm working with this huge brand. But, you know, sometimes it's comes back to the old famous saying, it's not the size of the dog, it's the size of the fight in the dog. And I've always been a big believer of, whether it's, I've stood outside my competitors' doors, I'm ashamed to say, in the early days, with O2 balloons outside other network stores, I won't say that in case they come after me, but, you know, with balloons and, you know, wanting to give just children in the shopping malls balloons and, you know, here you go and, you know, try and have a conversation with mum and dad whilst the kid's got a balloon and stuff and it's got my brand on it. So there's lots of different disruptive ways that you can do it. So please don't think the high street or wherever you're going, and franchise models, even if they're small, is it a bit more of a fight at the beginning? Yeah, it is. But that's what you signed up for, right? Everything that's worth having shouldn't come easy. If everything was easy, we'd all have islands next to this guy behind me, wouldn't we? We'd all have an island next to Richard Branson, right? So it's not designed to be easy. It's designed to be there. But at the same time, remember, what can I add to the franchise program? What do I bring to this? Because the franchisee always saw something in you as a franchisee. There doesn't have to be franchise programs for anybody, right? So you've clearly demonstrated something, and you've got a magic, and you've got a Disney dust, and you've got a unique skill that they don't have. That's why they've given it to you. So please don't lose that spark as a franchisee when you've got your franchise program and you're out there modeling it. And yes, it's a grind, and yes, it's a grab, but please don't lose your spark. Sit down and keep your relationship really keen with your franchisor. Share ideas and don't be scared to try new ideas and try new things, because together, the good programs that I see are where the best relationship between franchisor and franchisee happen. There's no arrogance. It's a great relationship, and it's a mutually valued and respected relationship based on trust. I think them are the ones that are really special. If you can find that in the franchise program, you know, you are literally blessed. And I would be working my backside off to maximize that model for my people, for the franchisor, and ultimately for yourself as well as a business owner.
Yeah, no, Danny, well said. And I think the big thing is that, you know, anyone investing in any franchise, big, small, at whatever level, it's your business, and yes, and you got to take control of it. You can't sit back and say, oh, I've invested in this proven model. Well, it's only proven because the people that run each location, I mean, there could be hundreds of locations, it's only proven because those individuals are doing the right things to grow their business. Yes, yeah, it might be a franchise brand, but you still got to do all the things that you would do if it was your own independent, truly independent business. And I think, you know, I think that's really important for anyone looking at investing in a franchise to just bear in mind. You still got to work hard. You still got to put yourself out there. You still got to develop your personal brand in many cases. You got to get out there in your local community, not just rely on the fact that, oh, I'm part of a big, well-known national brand that's on telly. It's not necessarily going to help you get customers and clients in your own area just because you open under that brand. So I think Danny, that's a brilliant note to end on, actually. And just for franchisors and franchisees to take some of those points. I think there's some excellent points in there. I wish you great luck going forward. I'll keep a keen eye on what you do next, and whether it's in franchising or not.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd like to have a bit of a blend, but yeah, this is going to be a great year for myself personally around, you know, both businesses are going to operate. I've always wanted to put myself out of a job. I've done it with both businesses this year. I think I can take a step back and move from operator to consultant. So yeah, I'm excited about the next step. But honestly, Doug, thank you for the time. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about franchising. It is, it's a great opportunity and it's a great model. I think you guys at the Franchising Centre are doing some great things for franchisors and franchisees. So thank you to you, because it's people like you that are battling these types of things. Thanks to you and your team.
No, I appreciate that, Danny. Well, look, have a good day, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
Perfect. See you soon. Thank you for your time, Doug.
Cheers. Bye.